is United We Strike Radio on the International Community Radio Network. Don't buy, don't comply, ask why. UnitedWeStrike.com Radio.
All right, we're back, folks. This is the February 10th version of the United We Strike 2012 Peace Train. We are glad you are aboard. As Vinnie Eastwood says, choose the peace train. Get on board, including your differences. Just be willing to have a healing conversation and to listen to the education and to break down the barriers that falsely divide us. And if you think that you really do want to wait and vote, then we're happy that you're here, because this is the monthly malfeasance report on the political scene. And we just happen to have our very favorite candidate for president this year, Clint Richardson. Yay!
And there was much applause. Yes.
Wait, where? There he is.
Boy, if I ever get that much applause, we're in trouble.
And we got Mel Hallett here. Mel, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, everybody. All right.
Well, Clint, what's been happening in terms of politics as far as you're concerned this last month here? And actually, I'm going to bow out and let you and Mel pick that up. I'll be around if you need me. How's that?
Sounds good. You know, I've been working on a new script, and I've just about got it finished. And I'm going to make it into a little bit of a movie. I apologize, I'm a little under the weather, so probably hear it in my voice. But I've been taking a look at, you want to talk about malfeasance. I've uncovered pretty much the fact that government runs on malfeasance. It's not really a it's not really a non-malfeasant government. So I took a look at what's called the Senate Ethics Committee, as well as the Congressional or House Ethics Committee. It's called the Senate Select Committee on Ethics. And boy, you want to get a chuckle. You want to have a good time trying to figure out what the heck's going on in government. This really explains a lot, because what we have here is basically you have 100 senators, and they all have staff. Now, in a previous article, I uncovered that it costs us about $800 million to have these 100 senators, because they each get about $4 million each in a tax-exempt expense account, personal expense account. So right there, obvious malfeasance. But what I've uncovered here is that the Senate Ethics Committee, the committee of six people who decide on whether or not the Senate is acting ethically, with everything they do, from insider trading to anything else you can think of, that is done by what's called the Senate Ethics, the Select Committee on Ethics of the Senate. Mel, any guess as to who sits on that committee?
No, I don't.
Well, of course, it's six other senators.
Oh, well,
Senator Barb Boxer.
I should have figured.
Exactly. So what I'm doing is I'm comparing this. You know, I'm sitting here going, okay, so a senator or a group of senators is on a committee to decide if their partners in crime are committing malfeasance or an ethics violation, whether they're breaking the Senate rules or not. And, of course, the Senate makes their own rules, so it's kind of a wash anyway. But here we have six senators on a committee to decide whether all of them, including themselves, are breaking Senate ethics rules. All right, if that alone doesn't raise up a red flag and you know, scream out malfeasance, for the last 4 years, there's been almost 400 complaints, or what they call alleged violations, of Senate rules. Each year, the Senate Ethics Committee puts out a report that...
You do realize that the short for that is SEC, just like the SEC.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, they're an honest organization. So out of about 360, 370 actual alleged violations of Senate rules, that means that either a senator or a people or someone else in government actually complained to the Senate Ethics Committee that one of the senators or their staff was actually in violation of Senate rules and basically creating an unethical situation. Absolutely none of those got out of the Senate committee into a judicial review. So 306, I think it was 365, if I'm not mistaken, cases where someone complained of ethics violations to the ethics committee, and not one of them got out of the judicial, or excuse me, the preliminary inquiry state. So what I'm comparing this to make people understand, is let's say that we had a prison full of 100 prisoners. And between prison rapes, you know, shivs in the back, selling of contraband, gangland-style beatings, murders, riots, whatever, prisoners are periodically judged on their ethical and moral behavior, right? So the prisoners elect a committee of six other prisoners, and they assemble in a special and, you know, like an official-looking chamber, maybe wear some black robes or whatever, and they judge whether or not the other 94 prisoners and themselves acted ethically and morally during their rapes, shivs in the back, contraband sales, you know, beatings, murders, and riots. So this is the Senate Ethics Committee, and what I've found is that nothing is unethical. The one thing that I did found, they actually wrote what they call a letter of admonition, a public letter of admonition, basically a legal warning. It doesn't hold any legal weight or anything, but it basically says, hey, you remember when Obama became president and Robert Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois is there, appointed a senator. And you remember the big controversy because he was getting paid off to appoint the senator. So this guy that got appointed senator, his name was Burris, and I don't believe he's there anymore, Ronald Burris. He basically lied under oath in court and also to the Senate Ethics Committee and also to Congress, I believe, the House. He lied under oath, he gave false information, he withheld information, and he got caught in a phone call saying that he would give Blagojevich's campaign money if he was assured a Senate seat when Obama became president. Okay? This is what the Senate Select Committee on Ethics, in their malfeasance, decided was worthy of at least a letter. It never got out of inquisition. It never left the committee and went to a judicial review. But what they did was they sent him a nasty gram, a letter that said, shame on you, now Senator Burris, for lying under oath and doing some very bad things. So basically, again, you've got senators who are committing massive crimes. They're insider trading. They're you know, there's several articles a while ago that showed that these guys were the best insider tradings out. They were allowed to trade inside. They're doing things that are just unbelievable. They're all millionaires, if not billionaers. They've got this $4 million expense account the taxpayers are paying for, tax exempt, along with every other expense that's paid in other funds, over $800 million worth. So, I mean, you've got a situation where senators are judging themselves on their ethics. And, of course, any prisoner knows that if you turn in another prisoner, if you rat on another prisoner, that prisoner is going to rat right back on you. So we've got a case of complete and utter failure and complete and utter malfeasance here just in the Senate and Congressional Ethics Committee. The Congress is the same way. The House, excuse me, the same thing. The House Select Committee on Ethics. Congressmen judging each other on their ethical behavior while they're committing crime together. Do you know, someone said in the last show, this is legal crime, basically. They're not breaking rules. They're following Senate rules. They're following the ethics. And when they tell them in their little letters and their little meetings that they have on ethics, they're not teaching them ethics. They're teaching them how to get around the Senate Ethics Committee, how to get around Senate rules, how to get around or work within the U.S. Code to commit legal criminal behavior. You want to talk about malfeasance? You got it right here. I suggest everybody wait for my video, but, you know, everybody should be looking at this Senate Ethics Committee. This is the most ridiculous concept I think I've ever seen in government.
I propose that they take all those those ethics violations and hand them over to Saturday Night Live and just let them have a heyday with it, because that's about the best you're going to get out of it.
Well, it'd be more coverage than they get now. I mean, geez, it's ridiculous. What's going on with you, Mel?
Oh, I think I got under the weather just kind of like you did this last week. So I'm in the state here trying to figure out how we can kind of raise a little heck with the voting process, because we're still trying to take some things to task. It's about on the level of the Senate Ethics Committee as far as I'm concerned. I'm to the point where voting, I'm not sure I have that much time to waste, but I think I could put.
You don't want to stand in line for 8 hours to vote?
You don't have to do that here, because you just mail them in.
Well, you'll have internet voting soon, I hear.
I wouldn't be surprised. It just gets more bizarre, and nobody. I was at a meeting here recently, and asked them the question among this Occupy group, and they all said. I asked them. I says, are you guys the people here have any problems with the electronic voting machines, and why are we still using it? And you could tell by the body language in the group that they, they were wondering themselves. And the League of Women Voter lady stood up there and says, I don't see anything wrong with those machines. So when you got those kind of guys, running things, well, I guess you won't see any kind of problems with those machines. So.
Oh, we call those kind of people useful idiots or useful innocents, the people who blindly support government due to faith or belief that it is good, kind of like they did in the Bolshevik Revolution, where millions and millions of farmers were killed. People in this country supported that Bolshevik Revolution. Lenin. Coined the phrase, if I'm not mistaken, useful idiot. These people who support something they do not comprehend or understand. And that's what we're stuck with right now in government. Because, most people, I find that most good people seem to not be interested in politics. And I can't quite understand that. I know a lot of good people who just do not want to talk about politics, and there's the old adage that's said so often, we're not going to talk about, we're together, we're having dinner, we're not going to talk about politics, and we're not going to talk about religion. And I'm like, but what else is there? what are you going to talk about? It's everything that's happening. Why are you not interested in everything that's happening to you? Why you're sick? Why your children are sick? What's happening in the Gulf, as they were talking about last show? What is it? Who could have possibly come up with such a social rule? And I think I have the answer, and that is a politician and a priest.
Well, I didn't think I would have this happen again, but I was actually having a discussion today with somebody that was telling me about, how a guy with some box cutters could, cause some problems on an airplane and create the one that we dealt with back in 2001. So, if you don't want to hear what's going on out there, or you want to buy the storyline, it's still out there. So, but there is one good thing I can say, that there's some ladies down in the county next to me that I have actually been able to overthrow the ill-conceived election of their county clerk, who had oversight over her own election. So sometimes some people do get retribution for doing some malfeasance.
It's few and far between, because like we just saw, when the same people that are committing the crime are also the ones that would be the judge and prosecutor of the crime, how do you get anything to happen? And again, man, I have to stress here that of those You know, Rod Blagojevich was a lawyer, a barred attorney. Obama and his wife are barred attorneys. I think Mark, about three of the Senate Ethics Committee members are barred attorneys. You have a major thing going on, and one of the things that they did was take away Blagojevich's right to be an attorney. They disbarred him because, as with the Senate Ethics Committee, anytime the reputation of the bar or the reputation of the Senate is on, that's really all they care about, and that's when they actually rule on things like Blagojevich, who, you know, I guess it was hard not to with him, but it turns out he was actually going after some banks, Bank of America and another. There's a whole backstory to him and why he went to jail. But again, if the Bar Association is, if 56 senators, 36% of Congress, as in the House, the President of the United States, and all of these other offices out there are all barred attorneys, and we're supposed to have a separation of power? We're supposed to only have a judicial that are in that legal recourse. We're not supposed to have a president that's an attorney. We're not supposed to have senators that are attorneys. You know, if we have a situation where the people who are making the rules, which really, I mean, all of our law, public opinion is the Bar Association. Anytime you go to court and something and a previous case law is brought up, it's not going to be anything before something like 1936 because that's about when the bar took over. And everything that you hear in court is bar. Anything that goes to the Supreme Court has to go through the Bar Association before it can get to the Supreme Court, and they can say yes or no, depending on whether it's going to hurt the Bar Association. So we have a case where we're going to a court of supposed law with barred attorneys deciding, who are sitting as sort of fake judges, expecting them to do the right thing. Okay, the Bar Association is basically the government at this point, as far as who's making, writing, and enforcing the law. So can we continue to fool ourselves by going to court, and can we expect anything to change if we're following their rules? I don't think we can. And one of the reasons, again, why I like this whole project that Karen puts on is the boycott. And I've got to be honest with you, the only solution I see left, even though I'm running for president, is to boycott. Boycott the vote, because, I mean, can you really have a president that was elected when only 10% of the American public actually voted? Can that really be lawful?
You mean like having an election and no one came?
Exactly. Exactly. How could they possibly give themselves any... How could they possibly give themselves any credit or any feasance whatsoever if not even half the people, which barely half the people vote in the first place, so I mean that's a whole other can of worms, but if no one shows up to the election, can they really claim that they won the election?
Well, but what they do is they just go hire somebody to dig up dead bodies, you know, or
that's true. I'll give you that.
Because it, you know, they don't care what it is. it the only thing you can do anymore is just about make you know, turn it into humor, because it's just so that bizarre. I mean, every day when you turn on your TV or listen to your radio, I don't turn on my TV, but a lot of people do. You're hearing something more and more absurd. You know, I was just listening to somebody tell me just a few minutes ago about how there was a lady in the state that they came and raided her place because she had 100 rabbits. Somebody turned her in. You know, the lady was raising rabbits. And so, and some of these were prize rabbits. It gets to the point where everybody will turn, you know, if they can make a dime, will turn on everybody if they can make a dime. So it's going to get pretty spooky here if we don't start, you know, showing the folly of it.
Well, and see, this is the problem, though. How can we, again, how can we really do anything if we're up against, it's the same thing with the Bar Association and the courts. Unless we get into a court where the people are actually the jury, you know, there's two different types. I'm horrible with remembering all the Latin terms and everything, but, you know, there's a court where you can have a jury and the judge can still have power to overrule the jury. And then there's the people's grand jury. So, I mean, at some point, we are going to have to be strong enough and bonded enough that we're acting outside of their legal system. That legal system is not there for the protection of the people. Police are no longer there for the protection of the people. It's not their job. They are there for the protection of the corporation. They're protecting government and the voting process. The whole thing is protected by the legal system, which is the bar. So can we continue in good conscience to try to fix the voting problem and in such a corrupt and obvious system that's not for the people? It's not for the benefit of the people. Courts are not. Attorneys are not for the benefit of who they're representing. They're for the benefit of the court. They follow court procedure. This is a good show for for Bert. So can we fix the question, I guess, is can we actually fix this within their system of law? Their system of law is not our system of law. We are a common law people, and this is a paradox, because we're literally trying to fix something from within a completely corrupt system that will never allow it to be fixed. So we're in a catch 22. We're in a causal loop where we can complain all we want. We can bring cases to court, and nothing's ever going to happen. So the question becomes, what can we do outside of court, as far as either boycotting or grand juries or something, that we can actually fix this thing? Because you know, I'm never going to be elected, not in this system.
One of the things that I've kind of proposed to some people in my area is take 10 or 15 people in your area and have them split up every meeting of public concern and court, and have just one person go sit and preside per month, and then and you know, even if they wore a uniform or whatever, although we were kind of talking a little bit about maybe wearing sunglasses, you know, like for They Live, sitting there and getting together and rotating them around. And you'd be amazed at how effective it is when they know they're being watched. And you'd get to see all kinds of stuff. Just by accident, I've seen stuff that I just couldn't believe, or I actually even made differences on things that I didn't even intend to make a difference on. So nobody else is there. So just sit there. You know, everybody shows up to the contentious things. And then that's when you get Delphi'd. But when you just go to the mundane, everyday business, you'd be amazed at what you learn. You know,
I highly recommend, by the way, people go sit. You are free to go sit in court as an observer. And the best thing you can do for yourself to understand what I'm trying to say here, why there is no chance at actually really getting these things to do the right thing, go sit in court. Go sit in traffic court, especially, because this is business. I mean, I had a judge, well, I was watching, I wasn't the one he was saying it to. He slammed his fist down on his gavel, on his table, his podium, and he said, "You owe me $800. Just like that. As if he yelled it in the courtroom. He's charging people. You know, basically the way it works, and I didn't know this until I actually sat in court, is you're gonna go up there, and it could be for other things besides just traffic, but go to the traffic court, and they're gonna say, "Well, you got caught with a joint, or you did this, or you did that, some petty crime with no actual victim usually," and they're gonna say the amount of money that we're gonna charge you for this offense against our little legal code is $3,000. But since I'm feeling like a good guy today, because the court has sympathy to your financial situation, of course everybody in court is generally, you know, the poor. it's never anybody that has the money to actually pay the fines. They say, "Well, let's do $3,000, but I'm gonna be a nice guy today and I'm going to take that fine down to $200, or I'm going to take it down to $500 just for you because I'm such a nice guy. Well, you know what that court has just done? And people have to understand how what courts are. They've taken $3,000 is the judgment, not $200 or $500. $3,000 is the judgment. That $3,000, from what I understand, the time that that gavel goes down on the thing and says case dismissed, that $3,000 gets put into what's called the CRIST system, Court Registry Investment System, and that money gets invested. Now, why is it $3,000? Because they're writing off the other $1,800 or $2,800. So you've got a situation where every case that gets up there, they're gonna rule that you owe a lot of money, and then they're gonna take a bunch of money off. They're gonna put that money, that original amount, into the court investment registry investment system, excuse me, and they're going to invest that money. This is the purpose of why there's always a monetary value attached to these things. This is not a court of law. It is a court, I believe, of, is it equity or what's the word for monetary? That's why there's always a monetary value on every case, because they're investing this money and then they're writing off and getting the tax exempt status from it. It's such a criminal thing, and this is where you want to go to try to fix the voting system? I don't think so. I'm sorry, but the court is completely corrupt. It is run by a private corporation, an association called the Bar Association, which is an offshoot of the British Accreditation Regency, the Bar, in the City of London. We're in bad shape here, and there's no way that we're going to fix this through the system that they have put in place. We have to create somehow a court of the people, and don't ask me how to do that. I just understand the concept. I'm just the messenger. But something's got to change here. The only way we're going to fix this is to literally boycott their system. I that's the only thing I can think.
Oh, for sure. But I also, like I said, going out there and participating in those, it really would only take a few hours a month to do that and let them know they're being watched, because they're not.
People should be filling the courts, honestly. People should be filling the courts, and they should be raising their hands to ask questions, even if it's out of order. They should be in the courts to let them know that, and everybody should bring witnesses. I mean, I like what Bert's doing, like I said, but everybody should be filling these courts and looking at these guys and letting them know, you know, that you know what's going on. You know this is a sham. You know that they are not judges. Half of them aren't even judges. Half of them are sometimes they're not even lawyers. they're clerks that get put on this robe.
You'd be surprised at what you get to see. I got to sit and I accidentally went to a wrong meeting one night and was going to leave, and then I thought, heck, I'll just stay here. I don't know what this is. And it was a building department meeting, and it was some big they were reviewing somebody building a Hampton Inn or whatever, and they were doing their presentation. I literally watched someone on that building department board say to the person that was building, "What are you going to do for us?" And I looked at him like, what is this, extortion? I mean, the poor guys are sitting there trying to get their project made, and they're trying to make him build some little thing for the city that was totally out of line of their building project. This is the kind of stuff you might be surprised you'll see. And it embarrassed them, because I made sure they saw my face when I heard that.
Yeah, you definitely weren't supposed to be there. Well, you know, I tease people around here every time I go to any of my board meetings. I get up, and the first thing I say, and I say it every time because there's always different people, because people are only interested in what's affecting them. They don't care what's affecting other people, only them. So it's always a different crowd at each meeting. And the first thing I say is, I came from L.A., Los Angeles, and I moved. I was moving north up here because I thought I was going to get away from such horrific, crime. I mean, such horrific malfeasance. And I came to Draper, Utah, and this is the most corrupt government. I thought I was escaping corruption, and here I landed in one of the most corrupt governments. You know, that's how I start every single meeting, and people applaud and love it, and they all then get up and say, "We know you're everybody knows these guys are crooked, but no one wants to do anything about it. No one, there's nothing happening. There's no repercussions. There's no nobody seems to be able to do anything, and that's because that you can't. You cannot do anything to these guys. They've set up this system. Again, the court is there to protect them, not to help us get a good government. So people have got to start packing these places, packing the courts, packing the, especially the traffic courts, packing the council meetings. Otherwise, you know, really council meetings are almost a formality at this point. They're doing it, I think, only because there's a law that says they still have to do it. At some point, they'll probably just stop doing them.
Right.
So
and I just found out one in my area is that those, it isn't just the council meetings, though. It's the work sessions that you may want be want was where everything gets done.
Well, what you need to do is you need to monitor the public hearings notices. And one of the back of the newspaper, they'll announce when certain meetings and certain things are going to be happening. And most people have no idea they're happening. One of the things that happened just in my neighborhood that I didn't see because they didn't post it, or they didn't post it where I was looking, was to build single-family dwellings over Indian burial ground. And so they have now dug up the entire area. It's ancient Indian burial ground. I look it up, and it's federal law that they can't do that. So I'm going to file an injunction against them. Now that they've done a lot of the work, I'm going to try to get a federal injunction that says, "Hey, you're breaking the law here. Whoever did this needs to go to jail, and you need to cease and desist and make this into a park or something, because this is ancient Indian burial ground."
Oh, I mean, Clint, they might just retroactively change the law, you know? I mean, that seems to be the way they're doing things.
it's funny, isn't it? Because sometimes they'll use the federal law and say, "Yeah, we have to do it because of the federal law." And then other times they'll say, "Well, we're a state. We don't have to follow the federal law." So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, and this is where the humor part, we almost have to start focusing on that, because it has gotten to the point where, you know, they're laughing their butts off at us. So it's now a time to start turning that around on them, because, I mean, what they're doing these days really is, I mean, the stuff for Saturday Night Live. It's just full of things that you could just rip them up on, because your jaw just drops, you know. I got stopped for a ticket, dim lights. I didn't have, my lights weren't out, they were dim. And so, you know, I get out to look at my headlamp, and I swear to God, this guy was, I thought he was going to have a heart attack, because I got out of my vehicle to look at my light. And, you know, I'm 60 years old, and this guy's, I'm going, man, they have them so programmed and trained to react to an old lady getting out of a car looking at a dim light. So
you're lucky you didn't get a taser in the boob. seriously.
No, I know it, and I was also lucky he didn't. I mean, he was threatening to take me to jail over it. So, you know, this is the kind of things that we're reacting to. What happened to the day when you could, you know, talk to the guy and say, you know, well, you know, this is, you got a dim light there, you know. I didn't know it was against the law to have a dim light, but I make it.
you'd be surprised what you don't know is the law. But see, again, these guys aren't there. Their job is not to protect you. It is not to help you. It is not to, that is not in their job description. You notice cops don't generally say to protect and serve anymore. They are officers of the municipal corporation. They are officers of the city. And, you know, it's actually one of the things that people use in court to prove that there's a conflict of interest within the traffic court, because an officer, a police officer of the city, gives you a ticket, and then you have to go in front of another officer of the city, someone who's being paid by the city, which is the judge, or what they're calling themselves a judge, to to find out if the crime was really a crime. So, you know, you ask the judge, well, are you an officer? Are you being paid by the very entity that issued the ticket? And now you're judging my case? Isn't that a direct conflict of interest? Oh, absolutely not. What are you talking about? No, not at all. Of course it's a conflict of interest. These guys, this is a money-making machine. The police give you a ticket for anything they can because they have a quota. They have to.
You know, one of the things...
They don't want to, some of them.
In the building where I have a business, they have had a section there for drug and alcohol where they, you know, have people come in and do their, you know, their urine tests and things like that. This thing is growing so fast and so big. And, you know, this is a big, I think this building's something like 45,000 square feet. I could see it taking this building over. And at the rate they're growing and the amount of people that I see coming and going into this place, it's big business. I can imagine what kind of money comes and goes between all the fines and fees these people are having to pay and classes they're having to take.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's not the fine that people are paying. It's the fine that they decide in court, which gets lessened and written off. That's the important part that people don't get, I think, for the most part, is that original amount that gets assigned. You know, why do it unless you're going to actually use it for something? So... Yeah, you know, and the other thing, I was just thinking about that previous show we were listening to and talking about the Gulf, and I'm really, you know, part of my goal in everything that I do is to start making what I'm telling people, what I'm putting in my movies, what I'm putting in my blog, to start to make people talk about this. And I'm always disappointed when people talk about such an important subject as the Gulf oil spill, and yet they never refer to something that I talk about all the time, which is government ownership in the oil company stock. Why is that not the most pressing issue? Because talk about a conflict of interest. Talk about malfeasance. If you've got a government pension fund that has over $1 billion in shares of Chevron and has millions of shares in BP and Exxon and all these companies that you hear about all these oil spills, you've got a case where government, through its court system, is not going to do much about an oil spill. It's not going to do much to the oil company because it has a direct financial interest in making sure that that oil company stays afloat, stays in business, doesn't get massive fines, and has to pay for cleanup. That would cost the shareholders money. Well, the shareholders, folks, are government. And this, above all else, in these conversations, needs to become the focus of the conversation. Everything else is basically secondary. If you're not talking about who owns the darn oil company, then you're missing the whole picture. You're missing the whole thing. And likewise, every other industry out there, from pharmaceutical to banks to everything else, nobody is in their discourse, in their complaining, in their figuring out of what's going on. Nobody is talking about the fact that the main shareholder of banks and the main shareholder of oil companies and pharmaceuticals and medical companies, insurance companies, the Diebold, the main shareholder of Diebold and all these other companies is government. And until that becomes a part of the regular discourse, then there is, you know, there's a big piece missing, a big understanding of why these things are happening. Why are people getting sick in the Gulf? Why is it not being cleaned up properly? You must start, folks, anybody that's listening right now, I'm begging you to make this a part of your normal discourse. And you can simply pull up any pension fund's asset listings, and you can see where those investments are up. You can pull up my movies, especially the Great Pension Fund Hoax, and you can see it all for yourself right out of the government reports. Until people start talking about this is the most flagrant of conflict of interest, the most flagrant of malfeasance possible, because you have a direct violation of ethics where government is regulating the very corporations where that it owns. This can't be. This is why we have the problems we have.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, in my area, you keep hearing them talk about, you know, invest locally. And if we could, if people would just start looking at those, their own city governments, their own county governments, their own school districts, you name it, if they start looking at where those pension funds are invested and start requiring them to invest them locally. And not playing games like we had a big thing going on where we're building a, you know, a big school here, and no local contractors can build these things because of the requirements involved. And so again, they have to go out of the area to have people come in so that they can even get a trickle down of a few jobs out of, you know, these big infrastructure projects.
But see, here's the other aspect of that. Those companies that are coming in from China, those are still government-held corporations. When we're talking about foreign banks, you know, Toyota Motor Company, all the telecom companies, all the cell phones are made in China. Well, yeah, but that's because all of the American companies are built up in China. Right, so there's no pollution control. There's no labor controls. Those are still government-owned corporations. And so, really, when you really boil it down, this is a very, very devious plan to take away the jobs here, bring the job situation over to China where they're paying very little money, and make the people here, the real end game here is to make people dependent on government. And that is where we're, well, I mean, shoot, if we really faced facts, we'd admit that we're already completely, basically dependent on government. If we really wanted to, you know, we could say that we can grow our own food, although that's, you know, those laws on the books that say you can't. You can do a lot of things that we call freedom, but they're not really freedoms, they're privileges. So basically, we're at the point where we're almost completely dependent on the government, because government owns these corporations. So really, the end game is that they've taken, it's not to take away jobs and have cheap labor, although that is a very, very good side effect. It is to make the people of this country completely dependent on this system that we're talking about, this system that we're unraveling right now, the bar system, the Senate Ethics Committee, the complete malfeasance that is government. That is what we're going to be dependent on unless we do something to change it.
Well, one of the things that you often hear, too, is they say, you know, the job growth in this country. Well, if you look at, I don't really hear them necessarily break it out and say those jobs are government jobs, right? I mean, where else are they getting job growth other than government jobs?
Well, think about it. One of the most ridiculous notions that somehow has been perpetrated onto the voting public is that government is somehow responsible for creating jobs. If a government creates a job, that means the taxpayers have to pay the salary of the worker.
Right.
Who wants that? I mean, who could possibly not think this through and say, wait a minute, we don't want government jobs. We want private jobs. We want jobs that are not dependent on taxpayer money. We do not want the government to regulate everything so that everything that happens benefits their holdings in these corporations. So the fallacy that somehow government is responsible and should be creating jobs, I mean, the jobs report that comes out is a, talk about malfeasance. The jobs report that comes out, every once in a while they'll show a decrease in the number of people who got fired, not explaining to people that just means that there's less people getting fired. It doesn't mean that people aren't getting fired. It doesn't mean that 500,000 people a month, you know, aren't losing their jobs. It's ridiculous the way they report this stuff, and it's very much a political move that has really confused a lot of people. Government is not there to create jobs. That's not what government is supposed to be. It's supposed to be there to make sure that the jobs that we create as people are regulated in a way that we're not doing what they're doing in China, what our government basically is doing in China.
Karen's sending us a little note here. I guess they're missing somebody to run the next hour. Are you game, Clint?
Oh, gosh.
Well, I'm not sure, but there's... Yeah, I know you're not feeling too good, Clint, but there's so much malfeasance to talk about.
Ain't that the truth?
So, would you maybe be up for that? And we can encourage people to go to Skybolt, unitedwestrike.skybolt.biz, and find our chat room. And maybe we can get some questions for you.
Well, I don't know if people want to hear me continue to rant, but if you need me to, I will.
You do a great job on this. I just and it's really nice to be able to get this out there, you know. So I enjoy hearing you. You guys have a nice rapport, and unless we might hear back, but we'll see. So we can keep going, and then we can play that wonderful theme song here somewhere along the line.
Yes.
And I'm not even sure how to get to this Skype, this chat room. So.
Well, here, I'll post a link for you.
All right.
Yeah, and that's for all our listeners, too. If you have a question on malfeasance, we got Clint Richardson and Mel Hallett. And Clint knows all about the Corporation Nation, did the Corporation Nation, so... I'm going to back out here now and see what I can do in the background. And thanks.
Malfeasance.
Malfeasance, yes. Oh.
So what do we? Where do we go with this mess? Okay, so we got some the chat room. At least now I can see that now. Yay. You know, I could kind of. I spent several years where I used to go to a lot of the meetings, and I was doing it on my own. And, you know, and I was learning things here and there, getting to know some of the city officials and the like. And you do, realize when you're out there, nobody shows up. And I would literally have some of those, different, council members or whoever, a building department, what else did I end up going to? You know, like I sat in courts, I sat in commissioners, sat in school board. I actually sat in a school board meeting where we had police tape running around and they were running a drill in the middle of the meeting. That was bizarre. So you find that people are, I don't know, I get frustrated, but I have to go out and get my feet wet periodically just to test the water, just to see, has the people started changing their thought processes yet? Some of them, you think you get little glimmers here and there, and then other times I'm going, oh, no, they're not quite ready yet. So I go back in. Do you do a lot of this, Clint? Is that what...
I was for a while. I was trying to, you know, I was part of the We Are Change here in Utah. We started up that group here, and I was trying to get people to do this more. And we actually had a sovereign guy named Joe, who I wrote about.
School board. I actually sat in a school board meeting where we had police tape running around.
You know, without a license, and would always get pulled over, and he'd have to go through the whole ordeal, and then he'd go to court, and basically, you know, people say that he would get out of his tickets, but actually the tickets have no legal authority over him, because he's not a licensed driver, he's a traveler. And he would do some miraculous things in court, and I was trying to get people to go ahead and watch how it should be done. And that's what I would recommend for people to do, is to start looking up people like Bert in Colorado. There's another guy named Paranoid in Colorado I know a guy in L.A. They purposely go to court to defeat the court, to recuse the judge. To get the case dismissed on the grounds of either conflict of interest or other things. That's what we really need to start doing, is encouraging other people to go in and prove that the court has no jurisdiction over these cases. Because all these people that are in there are completely oblivious to the fact that Joe, people like Joe and Bert and all these other people even exist. They're there. I mean, the first thing that happened when we went into the court, is that they pass around a piece of paper. It's a one-sided or two-sided piece of paper, and at the top of the paper, it says, "By signing this paper, you are giving up your constitutional rights." That's what the paper says. Then you go in and you mark either guilty, not guilty, or no contest, which puts you into the system, right? So right away, then they show a video about, you know, what are your rights and how you can, you know, easily go through the court system. And I'm just going, wait a minute, people. Why? I couldn't say anything as a spectator, but I'm like, are you serious? You're gonna sign away your constitutional rights and place a thing that says you're guilty before you even see a judge, before you even go up and cross the bar into what is wrong with you people? And so I would like to see more people go and challenge the court, and I would like to see those people invite many friends along with them so that these other people who are sitting there know that they have a choice, that they can actually do some research and stand up to the court and say, no, I'm not going to pay your fine. I've committed no crime. Just because you say I've committed a crime, because you've made a little legal code that says my headlights are too dim, like you said, I mean, come on. Really? I have to pay you money because you say in your little municipality, your little corporation, that my headlights are too dim because I'm walking my dog without a leash? Who got hurt? Who's the victim here? Can I face my victim? Is there a conflict of interest? Do you work for the city that's charging me? I mean, there's so many ways to say no. And that's what I'd really like to start seeing, is a challenge to the court system. More people challenging the court system.
Well, you know, it's challenging a lot of things, and I've gotten to the point, you know, where I start challenging it. I mean, when I went into the bank and I took in several thousand dollars worth of cash that I wanted to change the denominations on, they looked at me and they go, well, you know, is this from your business? And I looked at them and I'm going, what? Since when did you start asking me what I do with my money? But they were serious. And then I later on did hear Alex Jones going through something similar. They want to know what we're doing with our cash now. It isn't just checks, because I've gone through that route with the checks as well. And it kept getting down to smaller and smaller denominations. It's to the point, okay, why do I use this place?
this is another pet peeve of mine, and that people need to get. You know, the only reason that they have power is because you are forced through military martial law, basically, through police and military, to use that dollar. The only reason countries across the world recognize the dollar as having value is because we have this military force that's going to bomb them if they don't accept it. Okay. Likewise, every time we use a dollar, every time we spend a Federal Reserve note, we're supporting the whole system. We're literally keeping the system going by using their money. And that is probably the biggest problem that we have, because right now, if I try to start my own currency, and there's hundreds and hundreds of currencies across the land, and as long as you don't call it a dollar and it doesn't compete against the dollar, it's generally okay. But as soon as you start getting anything that starts competing against the dollar, they're going to put you in federal prison, just like the guy with the Liberty dollar. And so one of our biggest, you know, problems is that we are using the very tool that they are using against us. They're saying we can't even use that tool now in its cash form, basically. We're required to do it digitally. Talk about a situation where the slaves are funding their own slavery. It's really a ridiculous concept. Every time you protest the Fed and then you go across the street and spend a Federal Reserve dollar for a soda, you've just pretty much completely done away with any good you've done in a protest, because you're using the very thing you're protesting. And that, this is a very difficult concept, but it has to stop. We have to stop using what's enslaving us. And that goes with the corporations and everything else, the whole boycott.
Right, and getting back to, don't comply, don't buy. I mean, we, and ask why all the time. Because when I did, I felt bad for the lady when I kind of confronted her when I was standing there, and I'm sure it was all on camera and all that. But
again, a useful idiot, right? A useful innocent.
But I did go back in, and I had a talk with her in her office later. Come to find out, they, you know, I knew, you know, she was doing her job, but, you know, I realized that her and her husband felt very much the same way. They understood what's going on. So if we don't start talking among ourselves, start pointing these things out, because if you notice, it seems like the more we comply to their rules, the more rules they make us comply to. So, I mean, I went to get a checking, had to get a savings account for an HOA, which I did not want to have to do, but was forced to by one of the banks. And it was about 20 pages just for a savings account. You didn't have to used to do that. You know, you might have filled out a page or two. It was
Yeah, I know. It's law. It's, you know, you have to join an HOA. We're coming up to the end of the hour. I'm sure Karen is hanging on in there.
All right.
Karen?
Well.
Well, I don't know how to close the show, but I do want to thank people for listening.
You're listening to UnitedWeStrike.com Radio on the International Community Radio Network.
Some legal tender, silver backed in all its splendor. It's unfortunate